welcome, Red Ice members. Thank you very much for tuning in. It's great to have you along here for this second segment with Helen Sewell. We're talking about astrology, the connection to 2012, psychology, and much, much more. Really, really interesting conversation here. And I'd like to begin, Helen, to ask you a little bit about, I guess, the influences of the outer planets. We talked about this before, but I'd like to get your take on it. Why do you think that these outer planets have seems to have at least so much more effect on us, at least on the subconscious or unconscious level? Do you know why that is, Helen?
Well, if we go back into history, Saturn used to be the outermost planet, but because you could actually see it with your naked eye, you didn't need telescopes or anything, and symbolically. And in a person's chart, Saturn is it's the place where we meet our boundaries. It's the place where we meet reality. And Saturn is actually, if you like, quite frightened of the outer planets, because it means the outer planets are to do with the archetypal forces of unconscious. They're not conscious.
Mm.
So the three outer planets, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, They work on a different level. It's like they're the archetypal gods in our consciousness. In fact, so we have the personal planet, which is the inner planet, and then we have the boundary, which is Saturn. And then we have these sort of huge archetypal forces. And that's what I was saying, it was so interesting to see what was going on. It was on the planet when these planets were discovered, because it's almost like we're now ready to meet those forces in a much more conscious way.
Yeah.
So, you know, the first one was Uranus, and that was a time of huge revolution and innovation. And yeah, if you like, that was the start of the accelerated process. And since the discovery of the outer planets, you know, I think we've really, really changed and developed as, you know, in our consciousness.
Hmm.
And if we look to see when Neptune was discovered, that was very much a time of the filmmaking, fantasy. It was like the time when the Theosophists became very popular.
Mm-hmm.
The whole connection with the spirit world and illusion and all the kind of Neptunian things, that sort of wanting to feel connected with the spirit world came to the fore. It's glamour and fantasy. It's like the opposite to Saturn, if you like. So Saturn is frightened of Uranus because it feels like Uranus is going to overthrow the old order. It feels that Neptune is going to dissolve its boundaries.
Mm.
Because, you know, Neptune rules the watery sign of Pisces, which is much more a connection with the numinous, art and music. It's not tangible, earthy things. And with Pluto, it feels very threatened by Pluto, because Pluto drives the if you like, the huge evolutionary cycles, you know, even like the annihilation of a species.
Mm-hmm.
If it means the forwarding of our human consciousness. So these are big archetypal forces that are kind of terrifying to Saturn, if you like, which is our boundary.
Yes.
Interestingly enough, if you look just at our human form, the Saturn cycle is every 7 years. We get the conjunction, the square, and the opposition, then the square, and then the Saturn return age about 29.
Mm-hmm.
All our whole cell system is renewed every 7 years.
Yes.
So it's very much a planet to do with reality and incarnation.
And the physiology of our body, though.
Yes.
Ah.
Yeah, very much. And that's why, you know, all the conditions associated with Saturn, like arthritis and our joints, our bones. It's our structure of our body, our skin, which is the boundary of our body.
Mm.
You know, the all the conditions that affect us into old age are very Saturnian. And it rules the sign of Capricorn. And I think that's what's so interesting about the chart of 2012, is that the sun is exactly 0 degrees Capricorn. So if anything, if you look at the prophecies for this, I mean, many people believe there's going to be sort of a huge spiritual shift or shift in consciousness. That if anything physical is going to happen, it would certainly be in the sign of Capricorn, I think. It's the last of the earth signs. So it's the sign of manifestation, if you like, physical manifestation. And that's what makes me wonder about earth changes as well over the next few years.
Yeah, because, I mean, I followed this actually much more closely in just a couple of years ago. In that sense, it felt like there was a huge increase in earth changes, earthquakes, volcano eruptions. You know, of course, the tsunamis and things like that were happening. But to me, right now at least, it feels like we're a little bit more in a quiet mode. People might be screaming at me right now because they're following more closely than I am. But at least on these bigger events aren't happening on the wide scale. Do you think that we're in a kind of the quiet before the storm here, possibly, Ella?
I do, actually, yes. And even if you look back through, apparently, people that have done studies with the sun will recognize that the sun cycle is very significant.
Yes.
And at the moment, it is more active than it's been since records began. Sunspot-wise, it's gone very quiet, but it's like just a few years ago when the peak of the cycle, there were massive coronal explosions and black spots and all sorts of things. So, yeah, I think that is also associated with shifts in consciousness.
Yes.
Interestingly enough. And I think that could well be something that is physical and not symbolic.
Well, exactly. And again, that the amount of energy that is thrown out by these CMEs, the coronal mass ejections, is massive, you know. And again, how this affects not only our Earth's magnetic field, but also the magnetic field of our brain. I've been looking at this, and I think that there is definitely something to that, and in regards to how we are being affected, our own consciousness, of course. And then again, what we can mention, probably many people listening are aware of this already, but the activities of the sun is in a low point right now, and will become more prominent into 2012, leading up to the years of 2012. The activity will allegedly increase. We'll just have to watch that and see how these two correlate, because I think it can be really interesting to see if the energy, so to speak, on the planet also increases as the energy of the sun is being hurled at us, if you know what I mean, Helen.
Yes, I do. Yes, exactly. I mean, I certainly look at astrology as being a reflection of what's going on a bigger scale. From that point of view, it's just so fascinating. And because there's also other things, like the change from the age of Pisces to the age of Aquarius.
Mm.
And the thing is, when, as human beings, I just don't think we deal with change very well. We resist it. It brings up all sorts of anxieties for people. And the film Zeitgeist, I don't know if you've seen it.
Sure, I've seen it, yeah.
Okay, the first part one, is all about the ages and the shift. And I can absolutely go along with everything that's said in that film.
Mm.
I think it's absolutely spot on. But at the moment, with shifting over from the age of Pisces, which is so much to do with Christianity, I mean, the symbol of the fish with Pisces is also the symbol for Christianity.
Yes.
And so moving into the age of Aquarius, we're also going to have to find a new god. But I think, from my own personal view, or maybe it's a fantasy, I don't know, is that actually we won't need to look to the outside for an external god, because we are all god.
Interesting.
You know, we're all evolving at the same time. And the sign of Aquarius is very much, well, it's an air sign. So even though a lot of people think it's a water sign because the symbol is of the woman distributing water out of an urn. So people think it's a water sign, but it's not. It's an air sign. And the air sign is to do with the mind.
Right.
And it's to do with the rational and explaining things rationally. And it's to do with equality and that we are all equal. We are all equal in our humanness. Oh. And so it's a very humanitarian sign.
Mm.
It's a fixed sign, so the belief system can get a bit rigid and a bit fixed. But it would, I think, because of the sort of the rationality of it, it could well be that with Pisces, you know, it's very much to do with the numinous and spirit world, but Aquarius is much more to do with the mind. And what's rational?
Yes. And, you know, also I wanted to get your take on this idea of, you mentioned a bit before about Pluto, the how late, so to speak, that was discovered. We named, or they rather named, plutonium, you know, after Pluto.
Yes.
Which it's quite interesting in itself. But then, of course, what we had here just a couple of years ago is that they tried to, but they did rather, again, on the official level, demoting Pluto from planet status into one of these kind of outer dwarf planets.
Planetoid.
Yeah, exactly. But what do you think that's significant? Does that, or are they trying to send a message here?
Yeah, I have pondered this one quite a lot, and I was thinking that it's like the dark feminine. If you look at Pluto, the dark feminine, and I think it's scary for a lot of people. So it's almost like, well, yeah, if we don't deal with it, if we just sort of demote it,
it'll go away.
Then you know, its power won't be so great.
Right.
But it kind of, I just don't think that it will have that effect.
No. And then, how about the other? I mean, there are other planets further out from there. I mean, Eris is another one that came into the picture around that same time. I'm looking at a picture here right now. It says also that Haumea, I don't know if I pronounced that correct, and then even Makemake is another one of these kind of dwarf planets. Do you look into that stuff at all, if there's new things coming up and if that actually is significant in some way?
Well, I do. But, you know, I think that if something is meant to be, it comes into our consciousness. Yes, and each one of them has its own myth, of course, which is significant. But it's almost like if we take it on board collectively, for instance, with Chiron, the discovery of Chiron in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Chiron in myth, he was the wounded healer. He was a centaur. Now, most centaurs are a bit primitive and a bit wild, but Chiron was half god, half animal, so he was immortal. And it was when Heracles actually had gone off to kill the Hydra, and he poisoned up his arrows, and he was on his way home, and he decided to call in on his friend and celebrate. And the thing is that centaurs, they can't have alcohol because it makes them go crazy and fight.
Mm-hmm.
It brings out that primitive side of them. So what was interesting was that when the wine was produced, there was a herd of centaurs outside. And Chiron lived nearby, and Heracles, who is like Mars, he couldn't resist a fight, so he goes out to kill them, and with his poison arrows, and Chiron comes out to try and stop the fighting, and accidentally gets hit in the thigh, so the animal part of him. But even though the gods all gave their children to him to be trained in the laws of hunting and herb law and even astrology, because he had such a fine mind. Unfortunately, he couldn't cure himself. And so he had to live in absolute agony. So where we have Chiron in our chart, it's like our unhealable wound. It's where we feel wounded in a particular area. Say, for instance, you've got Chiron in the seventh house, the house of relationships. Then you are always going to feel wounded in that area. Now, this is a bit of an anathema, if you like, to our sun, which always feels that it can conquer and overcome any problem. But with Chiron, it's almost like the only way to deal with Chiron is to reach that level of acceptance. Because in the end, he does, it's interesting, there's two myths resolved at the same time, because we've got Prometheus up there in the chained up in the mountains, and Zeus said, if an immortal is prepared to give up his life for you, then you can be released. And it's Heracles that goes to Zeus and says, look, could you release Chiron, because he's in such pain? And so he releases Prometheus, and Chiron gets released into the heavens as the constellation Centaur. So it's an interesting resolution to that. But as regards what was going on in the mid-70s, we had an enormous explosion in kind of therapy, alternative therapy, the healing arts, self-help groups. You know, think how many kind of groups started up in, you know, working through your stuff and that kind of thing. This is all very Chironic. And it was almost like we were open to that kind of energy, if you like, at that time. And it's very significant in people's charts. And so has been, you know, welcomed, if you like, into the astrological bodies and used now by, I would say, most astrologers use Chiron now.
It's almost like that variable that you don't take into account at first, because also if we look at the orbit of Chiron, that is quite interesting. It's quite, you know, it's inside, just inside the orbit of Saturn, and just outside the perihelion of Uranus, I think, right?
I thought it was between Jupiter and Saturn, actually.
Is that it? Okay, can be wrong there.
Belt.
Is that the area? Okay, yeah, I'm just looking at a picture on Wikipedia here. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but it's definitely erratic, you know, nonetheless, and it's not centered as all the other bodies in our solar system.
Yes, but even Pluto comes inside the orbit of Neptune.
Okay,
it's
really?
Quite erratic.
Uh-huh.
Pluto, you know, it's an interesting orbit, Pluto. So sometimes it's not even the outermost planet, because it comes inside the orbit of Neptune. But certainly all of them have such a profound effect. And when we go through a Pluto or a Uranus or a Neptune transit, we certainly notice it.
Yeah.
Like, in, you know, when we get to around 35, 36, we get our Pluto square. And you get a lot of people go through a difficult time then. Then age 40, you get the Uranus opposition, you know, that rebellious time, the midlife crisis.
Right, right, okay.
Where people just rebel and they overturn their whole safe lives. And then you get the Neptune square at 42, which is also part of the midlife crisis aspect. It's so fascinating.
So that's
when you get the disillusionment and you're thinking, oh my God, you know, you look back over your life and you can feel terribly disillusioned.
It's very many of these encounters that we have with these interesting energies and properties coming in. I mean, again, Saturn return is another one that you mentioned before. And is that around, usually around 29 or something? Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And what does that mean more specifically? Do you know?
Okay. Well, it's because Saturn is the planet of reality completely, so it's like a lot of people, they think, right, okay, time for taking on responsibility, duty. People often, they have their first child that age, or they decide to get married and become more established, or they start a business, or it's a time where they have to face certain fears, because Saturn is quite fearful. This is a time to do with reality. It's like a reality check.
Interesting. How about the, I mean, again, you've talked a lot about mythology that you seem to incorporate into this idea of both astrology and psychology. Have you looked into at all the kind of how these topics then correlate between each other? I mean, I know that there have been studies done on how mythology and psychology are very much interconnected, so to speak. Do you view it the same way, that the Grecian pantheon, for example, that we're primarily been talking about here so far, is aspects in our own psychology, do you think?
Yes, absolutely, because if you look at a birth chart, it's almost like, yes, all these gods are alive and well in our psyche, and they're all playing out their various roles, and some people identify more with one more than another, and you may meet this in people. Or even in countries, actually.
Mm.
Yes, you can have like types that are more Neptunian or Uranian or Plutonic. You can feel it from them. And it's because that particular planet is very prominent, or is maybe an aspect, one of their personal planets, so that they actually identify with the archetype.
Hmm. Interesting.
It's very powerful.
And was this anything that you got into at all when you studied psychological astrology? Or maybe you can tell us a little bit more about what that actually means.
Well, yes, because like Carl Jung, he used astrology to give insights into his patients, because I believe it's the best map of the psyche that we have. It's a fantastic tool, because the moment you were born, if you, as above, so below, so if you map out the positions of the planets at the moment that you took your first breath and incarnated on this planet, then, if you like, that's the blueprint for your life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very representative, and if it's terribly helpful to understand. It's one way of knowing, man, know thyself. It's certainly a fantastic tool for knowing oneself.
Absolutely. And this is, was this a mainstream, so to speak, school you went to? Or do you know if these types of classes are around for people that want to study more? Or was this more a specific course that you took?
Yes. Dr. Liz Green, she is a Jungian analyst and a doctor of psychology. And I think people that have studied psychology from a Jungian point of view will understand the benefits of astrology, because it's very much a symbolic language. And so therefore, the course that she runs at the is called the Centre for Psychological Astrology at Regent's College in London.
Mm.
You can do the foundation year if you're not that fully into astrology, and then it's a 3-year diploma course. You can either take the certificate after 3 years or go for the diploma.
Hmm. And that will does that give you then kind of well, you can, I guess after that point then you can do readings and things like that, or is that another thing that you study for?
No. That certainly gives you enough insight to be able to do readings for people and convey the insights that you can see from the chart.
Mm.
But that's looking at the whole branch of astrology called mundane astrology, and the fact that, yes, world events also have a birth time. You can apply the same theory, if you like, to countries or events. or anything, if somebody's going to set up a business even.
Yeah. And
like a moment in time.
Right.
Has the essence of that moment in time.
So that's why it can be wise to consult astrology when it comes to setting things up. And again, I'm just thinking about how, you know, potentially even some births seem to have been, if you will, pinpointed in time. I'm thinking specifically of Prince William. Wasn't he born on the 21st of June on the summer solstice?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Things like yes. that. Seems to be yes. planned almost, you know what I mean?
Well, it's just uncanny when you look at certain events. Like, for instance, I was saying about Pluto going over America's ascendant. America's a cancer country.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, George Bush, his son, is exactly the same degree as America's son.
Really?
Which, you know, is incredible, the chances of that. But Pluto is going over Iceland's ascendant next year, and we saw what happened to Iceland, you know?
Huh. Really?
It has effects on countries, the same as it does, these transits have effect on people.
Yeah. So this is, and so have you looked into where it's heading next, so to speak? Is there a heads up or a little bit of a red flag going up here for a region or even a country?
The UK,
yes.
Because Pluto will be exactly on England's sun and midheaven, which is certainly, we will have to go through some kind of death and rebirth.
Hmm.
And yeah, all issues to do with that plutonic power and control. But how do we, well, hopefully we would have the consciousness to deal with that.
Yeah. Well, I'm even beginning to think about, you know, potential even, you know, terrorist attacks in that sense. And in, you know, many cases, there are people studying these events in the past and then come to the conclusion that these are nothing more than inside jobs and conspiracies, of course. We don't have to go there right now. But what I'm saying is that even that could be a possibility here then in 2012 during the Olympics in London, maybe.
Because the when you have long-term transits, like we've got at the moment, if we look at full moons and new moons especially, they because full moons and new moons tend to constellate whatever is going on collectively, that's also fascinating because there's a full moon in June, in 2012, which is particularly volatile because it's going to be square Mars.
Okay, war.
The planet to do with,
war.
War.
Yeah.
And I think that's very interesting because if we look back to the 7th of July 2005, the new moon was square Mars, and that's when we had the London bombings.
Oh really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Okay, so it's an echo here in a way that maybe is going towards 2012, so to speak.
Well, yeah, I mean that new moon on the 4th of June 2012, I think could be a bit of a hot spot. You know, it could really constellate something.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we can go into the realm of speculation and say, well, yes, it could be that... you see, the thing is, you always have to look at the end games.
Yes.
At the end games from 9/11.
Yes.
Who does it suit? You know, who does it really suit? I don't think it particularly suits the people.
No.
I think they've lost enormous amount of liberty and freedoms and rights. Through what happened then.
Do you look at all this stuff that is happening as either being positive or negative, or do you take a further step back from it all and look from it from another perspective and think that, okay, this is a natural cycle, we've gone through this before in some sense, we're going to make it through and might be able to come to a point where we need to go through it again, you know, in that sense, or are you Do you feel like worry in for these upcoming times in that sense?
From a personal perspective, and I think that I've sort of studied it so long now, for I've been studying it for about 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I've seen in the transits with people and countries, is that it's almost like we have to go through it. And if you look at the myth of Pluto, if you look at the myth of Pluto and Persephone, here's Persephone living an idyllic life with her mother Demeter, the earth goddess, and it was forever spring, and there was never any famine or winter or death. And then one day Pluto comes up out of the underworld, abducts Persephone,
yeah,
drags her down, rapes her, and takes away her innocence. I mean, she does become queen of the underworld.
Mm.
But the times, and it was negotiated that she spend some of the time up with her mother, because her mother could not get over the fact she'd lost her daughter. And that's when we get winter, is when Persephone went down to the underworld with Pluto.
Yes.
And that's when, symbolically, that's when we got... But it's almost like that childlike state of bliss has to come to an end,
yeah,
for us to grow. It's almost like we have to face the darker aspects, because there always has to be light and dark.
Yeah, otherwise there's no life. I mean, it would become too monotone, and again, no progress, if you will, or
it's growth. It's stagnation.
Exactly, yeah.
And so therefore, I feel that, yes, we do have to have these death-like experiences, both personally and collectively, so that we can come through them, hopefully become conscious of the meaning of it. I mean, if something, terrible happens in our life, I can't help but look at the bigger picture.
Yes.
And the meaning to it and the purpose of it. And then we can reap. The Pluto actually literally translates as riches, which I find it very interesting.
So it's, say it again, it's a time for opportunity as well as great danger, as it were.
Looking back through history, when we've had the Uranus-Pluto cycle, as I said, we had huge leaps forward in dealing with emancipation of slaves and also of women. The whole women's movement has taken a big leap forward at every Uranus-Pluto aspect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, it could well be that women come more to the fore.
Yes.
Possibly.
Yes. I'm also thinking, I think you wrote in your article that you have up on Diagnosis 2012, Jeff Stray's website there, a little bit about the green movement as well, and in regards to earth signs and how we potentially could see. And I think that we're in this time right now then, considering how much go green, both propaganda and kind of advertisement that we have everywhere. But maybe you can tell us a little bit more about that. And you think that that also is in some way connected with this whole oneness movement, the unification of things and the, probably know what I mean.
Yes. Well, interesting enough, when with Sagittarius, that's the sign to do with ideas and potentials. So with Pluto going through Sagittarius, we had an awful lot of ideas about the planet and about how we were going to deal with things. But now it's moved into Capricorn. This is where we can make things real. We can actually manifest them. And all things to do with the Earth, I think we're going to see come to the fore, especially things to do with food production. You know, the way food is kind of ridiculously sort of flown around the world.
Mm.
You know, it's like there's going to be a reassessment, I think, of all things earthy.
Mm.
Definitely.
So more, I mean, again, we have seen a rise in organic, organically grown crops and things like that. Well, I mean, some people, I remember, I think it was the end of suburbia or something like that, a couple of years ago, a documentary where they were talking about, at that point, they were actually talking about the peak oil business and all that stuff. And they were elaborating on the idea that people would be wise to begin to grow stuff, and that things potentially in the future will look a whole lot different than we first imagined, that even people can have their little garden locally and things like that. And that's something that I haven't seen really kind of picking up yet, but I guess that something has to happen for that to take place, meaning that if we don't have access, I should say, to good food or organically grown food, then potentially a consequence of that is that people will have to begin to learn a little bit about this themselves, begin to grow something, maybe get a little plant house or, you know, a greenhouse if you have the space for it, things like that, right?
Yeah, I think we'll see a lot more of that kind of thing. If you can imagine that we are going to go through a big period of hardship because of the kind of the Saturnian and the Capricornian flavor, if you like, that's really coming to the fore.
Mm.
I mean, interestingly enough, England is a Capricorn country, and it's almost like Capricorns, there's a side of them that kind of almost relishes that kind of challenge because it is a sign to do with austerity.
Mm-hmm.
It's like hard work, you get where you're going. It's the goat, the mountain goat, the symbol of Capricorn. You know, laboriously going to the top of the mountain, it's like it really wants to get to the top, to become, you know, the true craftsman in whatever field that they're in. And for status. So we are entering a period of certainly harsh reality.
Mm.
And I think we've almost got to go through that. And yes, over the next 16 years, I think that we're going to see a big revision in the way we live,
mm-hmm.
in our society, and what really matters, our whole value system.
And if we tie this together again and talk a little bit more about 2012, the economic situation, we've touched upon that a little bit. Do you think that we could see, because I know at least, again, if you talk about this on the official level, the politicians, the administrators of our society are talking about, you know, reforming, if you will, the financial and monetary systems on the globe. They're calling for a new financial world order, things like that. Do you think that that also is a reflection of their effort to try to both, of course, have their control system still in place in one sense, but could it also be that it's a reflection of that problems, if you will, needs to be taken care of more on a global level than just on a local or national level? Or what do you see that that's a reflection of something in regards to astrology here? Do you think it will it be able to stand up against the force of this this energy that screams of change and bringing down the old system?
Well, if we can say compare it with what happened with on the religious front,
mm.
when with Pluto going through Sagittarius, I mean, on the one level you could say, oh well, it'll be the death of religion. Well, it wasn't.
No,
it wasn't
exactly.
The death of religion, but whole religious issue came into very sharp focus. And it was like we had the big, everything was on a big scale with Sagittarius. It just has that quality to it. So therefore, it was like the clash between religions. But I think a lot of religions are going through the death throes or some kind of transformation. Well, certainly, the Catholic faith is. Not all faiths are. Some are growing, but there has been a shift and a change, and certainly it's almost like the energy has to come out somehow and somewhere. In somebody's personal chart, they could be having a difficult Mars transit that day, and you could say, well, they might have a very smooth day with one person and yet have an enormous row with another.
Right.
And it's almost like it has to come out somewhere. Do you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. It's about the letting off some steam in that sense.
Yeah.
The pressure builds
yeah.
up and you need to release it in some way. Yeah.
Yes. So therefore, I think the urge will be towards one world government.
Yeah.
Whether this is achieved or not, I don't know. But certainly the focus will be on that, because we can already see it. We can already see the way this sort of slight kind of manipulation going on, which really you have to question a lot of things. Like I could see, for instance, that we are eventually going to have to take on board being part of the euro. And then, so we get more and more countries, and then there's talk, isn't there, of there just being like three currencies around the world, and then eventually that kind of merging into what, it's
the
like,
final, yeah, of course.
That's the way we're heading.
Yeah.
And so therefore, that is certainly going to be the focus over the next 16 years, certainly.
Oh, absolutely, and that's going to be the effort for what they're going to strive for. Do you think that that's a necessity for the power structure? Is that a kind of is what we're seeing now, what we're witnessing, is that the kind of death throes of the old system, of the old order, or even the new/old world order in that sense? Because what I'm seeing is that this is all their efforts to try to prop up the system. They know that it's kind of crumbling apart because people will not, they don't want to go along with it, but at the same time, so what they're doing to counteract that is they're trying to bring in all these new elements that is going to trap us in a larger, more centralized structure in that sense.
Yes, I think it's completely in keeping with what's going on, but I think that it won't be smooth.
No.
And I think, as I've described earlier about the way Uranus absolutely cannot bear being tied down or controlled. It wants freedom and it wants truth.
Yeah.
And if it's not getting that, it will rebel. It will rebel. And so yeah, the danger of that happening is very high, very high. I think interestingly enough, this particular Uranus Pluto cycle, the reason I think that things are going to be more extreme this time is because there's so many other factors. I mean, all the prophecies and that aside, even if you just look at the astrology, this is the first time that we've had this Uranus Pluto cycle begin with Pluto being in our consciousness. Because the previous Pluto-Uranus cycle was before Pluto was discovered.
Right, yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
So therefore, it's far more in our consciousness.
Yes.
So the seeds planted in the mid-60s, those are the seeds. And then when it reaches the first most stressful aspect will be 2012, which I think is very, very significant. And the people born, actually, one thing that Richard Tarnas points out in his book is that the people born at the time, say 65, 66, they are actually embody those energies of that time.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, they are the ones that are likely to come more to the fore in 2012 because they're so tuned in to that kind of energy.
All right, right. Interesting.
Or anybody, actually, that has got very strong Uranus-Pluto contacts.
Hmm, that's really interesting. And what we could see here then is that 2012 will be the beginning of the end for the old structure, but yet again, that doesn't mean things don't usually, at least, I mean, again, the larger scale you get towards, so to speak, the longer time things take on an individual level, might go very fast, might take a couple of days for someone to change their energy or be affected in one way, but again, a nation, it's a larger body, so to speak. That means that it takes time, much in the same way that people have talked about going from Pisces into Aquarius doesn't happen overnight. It's probably a period of even several hundred years, right, where it takes for this to transit, and either the other energy kind of slowly fades off as the new is coming in, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so, therefore, that's the other thing, is that we're already in it.
Yes.
We are already in the process. I don't think that come the 21st of December that something just incredibly drastic is going to happen on that day.
Sure.
I think that it's much more of a process. And if you look back, we had the millennium, and you always have this kind of anxiety around the death and birth of something.
Mm. Absolutely.
And, it was exactly the same, in the previous millennium. You know, people thought, oh, it's going to be the end of the world.
Yeah.
But it's almost like our own anxieties about change.
Yeah, it's incredible. A lot of tension is building up, and that seems to be a part of it too, in one sense. So always to have energy and to have focus around these pivotal points, as it were, in history, and that seems to propel the agenda and the purpose of this experience even further, actually. So it's quite interesting watching it, because again, if the people upstairs, so to speak, are involved in astrology, they will have their eye peeled on these kinds of things, and they know that it will be either a pro or a con to have certain events or do certain decisions at key points in time and in history, because this will either benefit them, right, or it will work towards their towards the opposite, right?
Yes, yes. I think that sometimes people do need to go down into the underworld as well to have that experience.
Yeah.
So that we can gain insight, hopefully. And the other thing is of course that because of technology, this is also something new. So, and that's why I think it will be stronger this time, is because events such as 9/11, it was broadcast around the world instantaneously.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
We've never had that in history before.
Yeah.
So therefore, if there is that sort of sense of unrest, it has that feeling, and this is the good and bad of technology, isn't it?
Of course, and
because if we're bombarded on the news every day about sort of marauding paedophiles, then it's like, oh my God, they're everywhere. When in fact that's not the reality.
Well, that's a very good point. You're saying that also shapes our perspective, and in one way the world is getting smaller in that sense. We're getting a more narrow viewpoint just because we're being subjected to a certain type of information all the time.
Exactly, yes. Mm. So this sort of feeling of unrest, or because when I talk to people or audiences, there is definitely something in the air. There is definitely this sort of sense of discontent and anxiety about what's happening. And I think there are a lot of people that absolutely do believe that something concrete and absolute is going to happen in 2012.
Yes.
But I don't think there's any quick route to enlightenment.
No.
I think we actually have to do the hard work to get there. Because a lot of people, they're sort of, they might sit back and think, oh, well, come 2012, we're just going to have an automatic shift in consciousness.
Right.
But I think that it's not quite like that.
No.
I think if you did that to people that are completely unconscious, then it would blow their minds.
Well, that's true, exactly. I wouldn't be fair in that sense to them, because a lot of people will have to, be have their awareness with them, so to speak, as we go into this. And that's probably also why then, as you said, Helen, that we need to kind of, collectively go into this little bit of a darker period in order to come out of that even stronger and with more realization of what life is and what we value in life, no?
Yes, exactly. And there are things in the 2012 chart that also support that, because the planet Jupiter, to do with, it rules Sagittarius, it's very much to do with expansion. Interestingly enough, it's more prominent in death charts than Pluto is. And I think it is because of that kind of ultimate expansion out of our physical bodies. And Jupiter in the chart of 2012 is at the apex of what astrologers call a yod, or finger of God.
Okay.
And it's supposed to be quite fated, if you like. And Jupiter is going to be in the sign of Gemini, which is to do with acquiring knowledge and the dissemination of knowledge and communication. So if you're going to get any kind of expansion of consciousness, that again would be very much in keeping with that placement. And it's the two other planets involved at the other end of the configuration are Saturn and Pluto.
Yeah.
So again, giving it that quality of transformation and Saturnian gravitas, if you like.
So it's real interesting times ahead, that's for sure. That's what we can begin to round things up here for this time on that note, Helen. I think it's I've been fascinating having you here talking about some of this stuff. It's been really interesting hearing from this perspective. Again, astrology has been coming up now and then, of course, in our program, but you get dive into it and especially looking at the perspective of 2012. Or looking at 2012 from the perspective of astrology has been really, really interesting. Is there anything else you'd like to leave us with here before we end for this time, Helen?
Well, the only thing that I can say is that if people could heed what the gods wanted from us, which is to know ourselves, and if we can only be mindful of our actions and the effects, and taking responsibility, each and every one of us, in our everyday lives, then the knock-on effect would be global. But the more we sort of bury our heads in the sand, the more likely that the more darker side that we're going to have to go through. What I recommend to people is to really look at things as positively as possible.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's a good note to end things on here, Helen. Why don't you give out your email address for people who potentially want to contact you regarding readings and so forth?
Yeah, sure. It's Helen, H-E-L-E-N, Nuala Sewell, sewell@hotmail.com.
Excellent. Again, we will have the email address up on our website for those of you who want to contact Helen. And again, the AV2 conference, the alternative view.co.uk. There you can find more information about Helen, as well as other speakers that will be attending or speaking at the conference. Thank you very much, Helen, for your time here today. I've really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to potentially seeing you then over in London at the end of May here.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
That's our program with Helen Savelle. Thank you very much for tuning in. Great to have you with us, and my thanks to Fredrik behind the controls. We'll be back in a couple of days. Until then, stay cool, focused, and take good care of yourself. Bye-bye.